It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, 12 years after the B5 premiere. The Babylon podcast was a dream given form, its goal to discuss Babylon 5 episodes, arcs, and implications, to interview the cast and crew about their experiences and memories. It's a home away from home for fanboys, geek girls, and lurkers. It can be a silly place, but it's our last, best hope for B5 fans. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2006. The name of this show is the Babylon Podcast.
Hello again. Welcome to another Babylon Podcast. I am your co-pilot, Summer Brooks. And joining me, right here in the studio, right beside me, is Pinch. Mr. Jeffrey Willard.
Hi, guys. No, it's actually pretty cool to be here. I'm glad this worked out.
Good.
That I was here to be with you. In person, instead of on a cell phone on the 405 or some crap like that.
And unfortunately, we couldn't grab Tim right now, but we will keep trying because...
Parental duties?
Yeah, he should be here, but we'll wing it.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's another show.
We could just talk about him the whole time.
We can. It's actually Tim who spawned the idea for this show. And it was Tim who said, yes, I've heard you talk about doing a Babylon 5 podcast. It'd be a great thing. You've mentioned Babylon 5 a number of times on other shows. You should do this. And I said, I don't have the time. And then a week later, he said, okay, I asked Murr, and she said, I should ask you, what do you want from a Babylon 5 podcast? And I said, okay, what I'd want to see is this. And I sent him back an email that was a book. And he said, I don't care if you don't have the time, but you really should help me with this. Because you have the knowledge, you have the curiosity, you have that fan geek spark for B5 that the show needs. So here I am.
And he is the uber geek, isn't he?
Yes. He's an amazing B5 geek. He's an amazing graphics artist, as our website can attest. And all I did was bring you in because we had talked before several times.
You saw me on the side of the road with that little cardboard sign. Vorlon Will Kosh for sale or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but you still had the juice. You still had the B5 juice, and that's why you're here.
Well, thanks. I'm glad.
I'm actually very proud to be sitting here working with you.
Wow.
I told you before, after your Slice of Sci-Fi interview, but you guys don't know how much B5 meant to me during those years it was running. And I have to bow right now.
No, stop. But why?
For the first time on television, there was a story that actually had a story. It was like they said, in this, there's a beginning of the story, there's a middle of the story, there's an end of a story. It's actually all connected. The beginning means something, the middle means something, the end means something, and everything in the middle is a way to get there. It's not... You know, like we've said before, there's no reset button that's pushed at the end of the episode and you go back and start a new adventure and then push the reset button again. Everything means something. Everything has consequences. Every action either gets somebody in trouble or makes somebody a hero. There's meaning there. The characters at the end aren't the same people that we started out with.
So it was good television or it meant something to Summer Brooks?
Both.
Okay, what did it mean to Summer Brooks?
What did it mean to me? Good question. It gave me hope that television wasn't lost. It gave me hope that stories still mattered. That somebody out there, be it Hollywood, be it the big publishers, story still mattered someplace. And that meant something to me because, yeah, I have stories to tell. And the fact that real stories still mattered to someone somewhere meant that there's a glimmer of hope that I'll get my stories out there too. So, yeah.
It has been an amazing blessing to have met the fans that I've met. First off, when you work on a TV show and to even have the opportunity to meet the fans mano a mano, face to face, is unusual and anomalistic. Is that a word?
It is now.
It is now. you just don't, that's not normal that you get to meet the viewer face to face. And the number of times that I have been told that Babylon 5 made a difference to a person in some of the most, in the deepest, deepest parts of their personality, of their makeup. I'm starting already. It's overwhelming. It really, there's no way to describe when somebody comes to you and says, you helped me get through my bout with cancer. You helped me get through my divorce. You helped me get through the loss of my child. You helped me get through the roughest part of my period of time of life and all the, you know, it's like, it's almost like, what am I supposed to do with that information? I just had a job on a TV show. It was just a job. It was just a job for me. You know, I loved it. It was great. I don't mean to, you know, I'm not belittling it in any way, but when someone gives you that kind of feedback, how unfair is that to the doctors and the lawyers and the accountants and the politicians and the sanitation people and all the people of all the jobs in all the world, you know, and who never get that kind of feedback. No one ever says, oh my God, Dr. Smith, you saved my life. Or thank God you took that trash out because I'm just going to kill my husband if he kept that old piece of crap in my house one more day. Or, you know, I mean, you just don't get that kind of feedback. It's truly overwhelming to get that kind of feedback from a fan.
Maybe it should be an example that people should do the kind of job where they would get that kind of feedback.
Like what?
Well, maybe a doctor or a lawyer isn't doing the job they should be doing, and maybe hearing that a fan of a TV show said, you know, you changed my life, maybe that'll inspire that doctor or that lawyer or that politician to go out and do the kind of job where they're, the people who are watching them say, wow, you inspired me.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That's what I would like. That's what I would like. Exactly. I would like for multiple walks of life, I'd like to be able to walk up to somebody else and say, you know what? At this point in time, when you did this, you gave me hope again.
That's right. You didn't just give me a Whopper. You gave me a good Whopper. McDonald's ruled, and you are the burger flipper of the year for me.
We have to get people to strive beyond flipping the burger. There is joy. No, there is necessity in flipping the burger.
Exactly. And but there's good burger and there's not so good burger. Yeah. There's good TV and there's not so good TV.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll stay up with that. I don't know. There has to be more than just flipping the burger. You know, people have to say, okay, I'm flipping the burger now, but next year I want to own 5 stores with people flipping the burgers.
Sure.
You know, we all have to grow.
It's been an amazing experience to be able to be involved with people on any level that had that, that we had that kind of connection.
And yeah. I would think that more people would want to work on a science fiction or a fantasy or a horror show, because as far as I know, those are the only actors and producers and writers that actually go out to the cons where they can meet the fans. I've never heard of the people from Law and Order going out to cons and meeting the fans and getting feedback. I've never heard of the fans of, oh gee, Survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't hear of any reality TV, you know, conventions. It's all science fiction. Those are the people that love the shows. They dissect the mm-hmm. shows after they've been on. They're like, hey, this worked, this didn't work, that's scientifically plausible, this maneuver was crap, and hey, I like the way this guy portrays his character. I want to meet him.
Yeah. And that's indicative to science fiction as a genre. I don't think it's unique to television, because I think the writers of books and artists of graphic novels or any of the, you know, I mean, they all have that community sense about them, and they all come together for their community.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I don't think there's another community out there that I'd rather be a part of. Is this it? Something like this, you go to a con, you see the guy dressed up as the Klingon standing next to the guy dressed up as, I don't know, pick somebody.
Well, sometimes they're not dressed.
Yeah, well,
I've been to those shows
yeah,
too.
You've got the Klingon standing next to the Xena outfit, and you're like, you know, this is family. You know, these they might be crazy, they might need to lay off the booze or maybe have another drink to calm down a little bit, but deep down, there's a connection there. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good stuff.
It is.
So right. What do you want to know?
What do I want to know? What do I want to know? What?
Here I am, inches from you,
poking me. Hey, quit it. Hey, quit it. What made you make Kosh tick? What part of you made Kosh, Kosh?
That was a great one, because I have no idea. I don't know that I ever did make Kosh tick. I don't know that I ever did. I just sort of did what I could. I will tell you that when I put the suit on, I did imagine myself as Darth Vader.
Really?
Yeah. There you go. It's on the table. That's killing you, isn't it? Sorry. It's the truth. That's the persona that I had in my feeble head.
From a characterization standpoint, or just because it was the only full, complete armored person you could think of?
Probably both. Yeah, exactly. When I, when we did the scenes, I would... I had to know my script. I had to deliver the lines for the actor that I was working with, and I would do that. But then, of course, in post-production, we would change all that and add Ard White's voice and all that. But I would always deliver the lines with that same little bit of an English accent that Darth had. Or not Darth, but... thank you, James, yes. And that was sort of the mental state I got into. The thing that was interesting about wearing a fiberglass helmet without windows, it's not one of those breathable materials. Shock and surprise, yeah. And so I was, an awful lot of my sensory perception was gone because I couldn't see, and I really could smell nothing more than my own stinky body, and couldn't really touch anything. So I couldn't see anything. I had too little. On the second Kosh, the Alkesh uniform, mm-hmm. I had a little more light that was in there, but it was, on both uniforms, it was, or both costumes, it was a tiny little slot on either side of the helmet that allowed me to have just a tiny bit of peripheral vision. And so that would help me if I walked into a scene, I could kind of see like maybe a pole off to the side or a person or a piece of set dressing, something like that. That's what I could see. I could not see the person in front of me, and it wasn't sophisticated like the... Jack from Jack in the Box? You know, the guy that wears mm-hmm. the big... Yeah, Jack has an actual television screen inside. He gets to see what he's doing. He can watch himself. I didn't have that luxury. And everybody says, oh, well, they air-conditioned that for you, right? And it's like, no, there was no air-conditioning in there. The idea of losing that kind of sensory resource really helped me put me into the character, because Kosh was supposed to be this... thing we really didn't understand, didn't know about, didn't fully grasp their magnitude. And so that really kind of helped me get there in my own place. But come on, be serious, guys. I mean, I was walking around with a fiberglass football on my head. I couldn't hear anything. I had about 40 pounds of fiberglass on my head. I got that stupid shower curtain hanging down. And I'm supposed to interact with actors. It was like I was lucky I didn't knock lights off the stage, you know. So there wasn't any moment when I said, whew, I nailed it today. You know, that just didn't happen.
Did you get any of that when you started producing episodes or working behind the set?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but for clarification.
Any of that, yeah, we nailed it, you know, when you started working beyond the Kosh outfit.
Oh, that was more of a wonderful learning experience than anything else. I mean, those, you know, Straczynski and Copeland and Doug Netter were just brilliant men, and that was just, I was just in awe every day to be in their presence and to be around them. Christopher Franke, great, smart people. I just loved being around smart people. That's just the way it needs to be.
Could you maybe describe a typical day working with them, watching them put the pieces together to get the final product that we saw?
You know, it was a nonstop schedule from episode one of a season to episode 22 of a season, and it is a machine that just clicks and just rips through the day. And every day has to have part of the show that you're prepping, part of the show that you're currently shooting, part of the show that you've finished shooting, and maybe one more show that you are finishing off ready for delivery. And so within the course of the day, you were always working 3 to 4 episodes in your head, or at least in your responsibilities for the day. Mm-hmm. And then within the scope of some of my responsibilities could have been things that weren't quite so episodic in nature, as far as like I did a lot of work with the Warner Brothers licensing guys and helping to bring some of the products in the Babylon 5 fan club and publicity efforts and that sort of stuff. It was a lot of my responsibilities were directly under John Copeland, and they were there to facilitate the non-creative aspects of the show. And I don't ever want to pretend that I had a big part of the creative process, because I didn't. You know, I mean, it was a very, you know, unlike an awful lot of shows, when you watch the credits go by in the beginning of the show and you see produced by, executive producer, you know, we had a really, really, really tight little ship. I mean, there was a man that wrote the scripts, there was a man that made the shows happen, and that was it. You know, it was really that tight. It was very, very tight.
I still want more behind the scenes stuff. I can't get enough of them. I'm just such a geek of what made the show that I saw. I know like 3 weeks had to go, 3 weeks of work had to happen for each episode on average, right? You're talking pre-production, shooting, post-production, CGI.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to know about all those pieces. I'm just greedy like that.
It was quite the orchestra of collaboration. It's quite a deal. It really is. It's pretty fun. It's there's a lot of same managerial procedures that may be used in a militaristic environment. You know, I mean, there was rank and file, and there was responsibility and duty, and there was planning, and you can't land the fighter jets if you haven't built the runway, you know. So, I mean, there just had to be a lot of scheduling. You can't always make sure that what you are one step ahead of the production curve all the way, you know, and always knowing what was coming up next and what had to happen. John Copeland was kind enough to teach me a very important lesson in my producing career, and that was anticipate your problems. Anticipate. And I actually had the word anticipate written out and posted up on the wall in front of my desk, you know, because that was it. You know, whatever you were working on, that was already too late. It was the thing that was coming down the pike that had to be corrected. And that lesson has served me well over the years.
Okay. Producers need to be partly telepathic and partly precognitive. Gotcha.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's like the weatherman, you know. You got to know what's coming.
Guessing at everything. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, yeah, this is coming here, but we're not going to quite sure what it's going to do.
Damn good beer. This is really good beer. I like this show. I'm coming back to
beer.
Phoenix more often.
Okay, we're going to take a break so he can get a refill.
There's something awkward about writing a promo for a show. Doing the show, no problem. Write an essay, sit down, talk for a bit about what's on my mind, what's new in geekdom, throw out a game review or two, and then read the essay, which of course focuses on a geek topic. NPR wouldn't run it because they're too good. Not that I'm bitter. But the promo, that's the tricky thing. See, that's the time when you have to say, hey, listen to my podcast that's about half an hour long, has me talking geek to you, and ends with an essay that's also about geeky stuff. It's called Geek Fu Action Grip. People seem to like it. It's been around for several months, and there's no sign of it stopping. It's in the Podcast Pickle Hall of Fame and a proud member of the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. You can find it at www.geekfuactiongrip.com. And I don't know how to just come out and say that. I'll let you know if I come up with something.
Summer Brooks, asleep at the wheel. That's right.
I'm watching her. This is Jeffrey.
There's more beer coming in. Yes, that's right. But if you put on headphones and pull your microphone down. Thank you, dear. That's great.
She's okay, special. Yeah. I was asleep at the keyboard. That's
no,
all
no.
me.
I'll run the show. That's okay. I'll go ask you the questions.
Okay, go for it.
All right.
Go
the first thing I want to know is how do you use this ZapCap bottle opener?
Just stick it on. Gently push. No, push down and then.
Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah.
I got it, though. All right. Oh.
Okay, we got a technical difficulty.
I feel like such a rookie. Nice!
Okay, we have the fresh beer. Everybody's all set.
Oh, I'm sorry, could you hand me my glass there? Cause I'm, that one there. Thank you. It's a party at the Babylon Podcast. This is good stuff. Okay, what were we talking about during the break?
We were talking about producing.
No, wait, no. Lori, no. Lori had a question. Yes. Introduce Lori and tell her that she had a question.
Lori, welcome.
Yes, thank you.
You had questions about being a producer.
I did, actually. I'm one of the, I'm probably sure I'm not the only one out there, but I really have no idea what exactly a producer does. Mm. I was under the impression, I had told you earlier during the break, I was under the impression that a producer is the person who comes up with the money to put the show together. And I assumed with that came privileges, like on the set, but I don't know what other roles you have on the set as a producer.
Right. Typically, you know, you watch the credits at the beginning of a show and you'll see all kinds of titles going by, many different producer titles. There's executive producers, right. There's supervising producers, there's line producers, there's all these producer titles, hyphenated producer titles. And if you're really, really into this, if you really want to know, thank you.
I am.
If you really
want to
know, the you can go to a website called theproducersguild.org. And the producersguild.org, there's a place on there you can look and read the official Producers Guild definitions of what a producer does. But yes, an executive producer typically is the person who has either A, created the show, or B, created and sold the show, or C, just sold the show. So those are usually at the pinnacle of the pyramid in the whole production scheme. Underneath them, you may have, depending on the structure of the show, each genre, a reality show, a game show, a clip show, a dramatic program, a nonfiction History Channel kind of show, these will all have different definitions for these different producing roles. But you may have a supervising producer, and usually a supervising producer is the person that several producers will report to, or just one producer would report to. Somebody reports up to this supervising producer. Then you have a producer. And the producer is the person who, I hate to say this to you, but he's the one that produces. It's the job of taking the written word of the script and turning it into picture. You know, that's their job. It's pulling all the resources necessary to make a television show.
So are they in on, I mean, everything from the interviewing the actors to see who would best fit the role to the whole editing thing and the whole directing thing? You're sitting there right side by side with everybody to figure out what makes the best show.
Soup to nuts, exactly.
Very
from
cool.
The very beginning to the very end. Typically, the producer is handed a project, whether it's a script for an episode of a dramatic series or it's a whole new reality concept, or it's a whole new nonfiction Discovery Channel, A&E, History Channel show, something like that. And their job is to turn it into a television show.
See, I think that would be even more interesting than just being the actor, because you get to see the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're responsible for the whole thing. And then, of course, you also have the financial responsibilities that go with it, too.
Well, see, I wouldn't want that part. Yeah, no.
So is the financial part of it, is that just making sure you keep to the budget you're given, or do you actually have to go out and get the money to get things made?
Yes and yes. I mean, there are it varies between the kinds of projects that you're doing. Sometimes the project is handed to you with a very specific budget. Sometimes you have to be the person who helps to create the budget. You would do that usually with something that's either called a line producer or a unit production manager, and they have to be involved in helping you to formulate what those numbers are to create the budget and all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, you have the financial responsibility.
Which do you like better as a person?
I eat it all up.
Yeah.
I was made for this.
Yeah.
This is what I do.
You're home, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Very cool.
So figuring out how much stuff costs, is there like a shopping list? Or do people actually just call up, okay, I want you to do this. How much will it cost?
It's a little more refined science than that. But what we typically do is once we understand what show we're doing, and by that I mean you have the script in front of you, you know the story that you're about to tell, you literally break down that script into how many days you need to shoot this kind of thing, how many days you need to shoot that kind of thing, how many people you need to do that, what kind of equipment do you need, what locations do you need to be at, what rights or clearances or legal issues are involved. And you have to map this whole, it's like going on the ultimate Uber family RV trip. You know what RV is about? It means ruined vacation. And that's pretty much what these shows are like. You know, it's trying to take $100,000 and make it look like $500,000.
Huh. So the shows that like the History Channel or Discovery Channel where they're actually on location in Ireland or Yugoslavia or something, like, do they actually hire the crews there to do some of the work to save the logistics and the cost of shipping everybody over there and shipping everybody back?
In many cases, yeah. That's exactly what we do. In some cases, it doesn't work out for various creative, legal, or, I don't know, financial reasons. You know, as a strange example, the reason I'm in Phoenix this week is because I'm producing a show for Court TV, and there are so many talented people here in Phoenix, and yet just a strange turn of events, I have to literally fly a crew in from Los Angeles to work on this week's show.
Now, see, we thought you were here
Just to hang with you guys. Well, you know, I am, and I just put the bill on Court TV.
There you go. Speaking of, you know, being here just for us, I'm here to make you sick.
You are. Is this the fancy stuff?
That is.
How phallic is that bottle?
That's so scary. Totally phallic.
You just sit there and do that for a little while. I'll be fine. Okay. Are you having one too?
I am.
Yeah?
I am. Totally. Cheers. Oh, yeah.
Cheers. Great to meet you. Glad to be part of this. I love this. I'm coming back.
Can we plug this on the show?
Sure.
You know, when you start out with tequila, it goes tequila and beer, never fear.
Yeah.
So we have, I think we're safe.
Asombroso.
Oh my God.
Isn't that the yummiest?
I am a tequila nut, and I've never had anything go down like that.
Yeah, it's almost like a really good scotch. It's almost whiskey. It's so aged.
Oh.
Yeah. Nice, huh?
Nice.
And that's why you pay for it.
Nice, yeah. Thank you for sharing. What was that, about $75, $80 that I just drank?
Oh. Yeah. And you know what?
There's still
half a bottle left, and I'm more than happy to share.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. I like this party.
Me too.
The official tequila
of Babylon Podcast.
The Babylon
That's
Podcast.
Right.
There you go. We have to get them as a sponsor. Yeah? You think? No, it won't happen.
No. That's a good idea.
Yeah. We should. Because there was one episode where Peter Jurassic was drinking. There was a Zima right there on the table.
Oh, that was so embarrassing. In those early days, somehow Warner Brothers put together this product placement deal. And that was back before product placement was a cool thing to say, you know, and product placement deal where Zima was part of the show, and it was in the Zocalo. Remember, mm-hmm. there was always a Zima sign in the background, mm-hmm. and we had Zima bottles all around the set. My mind is a little fuzzy on that. I'm not sure if the Zima bottles showed up and we drank all the Zima and then put water in it for the cast and crew. Somehow there were these Zima bottles all around the place, and it seemed to be an endless supply of Zima was around. But what a god awful drink that was.
Yeah,
glad that went away.
I couldn't figure. We're sitting there watching the show, going, They've got Zima's the only branded liquor that survived. Oh my goodness, we have to stop this now.
Oh, you know, it hasn't gone away.
Is Zima still around?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you guys, new flavors too.
In defense of Zima,
okay,
it is Arizona. When it's 120 degrees outside and the party is outside, a nice
Zima
glass
on the rocks.
And it's got to be damn cold. It is wonderful. It's nice and refreshing and invigorating. So you know,
that actually lends.
Okay, so I take back my comments about God Awful.
So, and Zima, if you're listening.
We love Zima.
Yeah, there you go.
God, that was good stuff. Yeah.
That actually sheds a new light on that particular scene.
Which one?
It was the scene where Londo used one of his appendages to try and steal a card.
That was funny.
And the guy put the cold glass down.
That was so funny. I remember. It's so funny to hear you guys. You know, for me, it has always been just one big blur. You know, the whole 5 years was just, it's a chunk of my life that's, the chapter is closed.
Right. It's a tequila.
But to when you mention little things like that,
it all comes back.
It all comes back. And that where I stood, and Kurt said that the other day, didn't he? You know, is where we were standing and what was involved and how that happened. That was a crack up. that horrible appendage thing was floating underneath the table and
stealing a card.
How funny was that?
That was
We have another friend who's a grip and has been a grip on a lot of really big shows, big movies. And he will occasionally do the same thing you just did. We'll mention a scene and he'll go, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll tell this whole huge behind the scenes thing that went on and how this person almost died. And same thing that you just said, though. It brings back a whole.
And the funny thing is, Lori, that when I watch Babylon 5, that's what happens to me. I can't sit down like a viewer and just watch the episodes and enjoy the dramatic content. I am forever interrupted mentally by the fact that I was like, oh my God, I took a 62 shots to get that one, you know, scene down. Or I remember when I fell off that. You know, another one that comes to mind. Perhaps,
see, what you needed was 62
shots
of that.
Yeah,
one shot beautifully.
Had we had more shots on the show, it would have been different. Often I am asked what was my favorite scene to produce, you know, to do with Kosh. And it has always been the big face-off with Sheridan in episode 315, Interludes and Examinations, when it's time to get into the Shadow War.
Right.
And the big, as Bruce and I used to call it, the brawl in the hall that he and I had. I was suffering with 104 degree fever. The day we shot that.
Oh, man.
It had been on the schedule for a while. Bruce and I had actually rehearsed that particular set of scenes beforehand. We had a fair amount of preparation because we knew it was a pivotal story point. And the day that it came to shoot and I knew I was sick, there was no way I wasn't going to work. So I shot that thing with 103, 104, I don't know. I was seriously sick that day.
You were
day.
Contagious.
I was bad.
Yeah.
But I did it anyway because I had to. But that's what happens to me is I can't watch the scene and just go like, oh, look at, you know, oh, how cool.
You're
that's
like,
good.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Instead, I'm like, oh, my God. How did
that's
I get through that?
That's the day I was sicker than a dog.
Way sick.
So question, what's your favorite show, for example, that you like to watch now? Sci-fi. Like Battlestar or something like that. I mean, just quickly off the top of your head.
No, that's a good question. And I'm not sure I'm too crazy about any of them. I'm really not. I haven't gotten too, Stargate hasn't ever reeled me in. Never really did. Everyone speaks very, very highly of Battlestar. And I have watched it. And I have enjoyed it, but I don't get reeled in by it. And I mean reeled in, I mean hooked,
right?
You know?
Well, my actual question to go with that is, can you watch a show or a movie or anything now without thinking of what goes on in the background? Can you be reeled in as a viewer, even though you know
what
of the stuff that's behind the scenes?
Absolutely.
Good.
Absolutely. No, if it's a really good show, I'm just a regular guy. this George Clooney movie that was just out, Good Night and Good Luck.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I mean, that just riveted me from the beginning to the end, and I was just captivated because the subject matter was important to me. I understood what it was about. I identified with the characters, and I, you know.
So you're separating. You can separate your job from who you are as long as you weren't on the set.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
That's nice.
But I'm also highly critical of people who do work that is similar or competitive. If I do, you know, I've done an awful lot of History Channel and A&E and that sort of stuff. And when I watch some of those shows, I watch them with a stinky eye. You know, I'm looking at them going, you know, sometimes they're great and sometimes they're not and that sort of thing. But
what are your current favorite shows? Something that has reeled you in that you're like, I got to make sure I get record that because I'm working. I got to see that next week.
You know, I hate to sound so boring about this, but I have
been... where you say Dragon Page. No.
Right. What other list of sponsors do we have to assess? No, I have for the longest time been a West Wing fan.
Oh, there you go.
Aaron Sorkin, I think, just rocks. He has been an amazing writer, and he set forth, and then John Wells is probably the ultimate producer. And I am just a hardcore West Wing fan. And I watch the reruns on Bravo. And that to me is the true mark of a show. If you can watch the reruns over and over and over, and you know the words, and you still won't miss an episode, that's when you know you've got something really good. And that's Rocky Horror, exactly. You know, my favorite movie still to this day is... Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh yeah.
There's just no other film that's ever come close. It's so heady. It's got so much going on.
And see, this is the part where I go, I think I'm too young to remember Buckaroo Banzai. What was that?
He's loaded for bear, Buckaroo.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Great movie.
So anyway, yes, I can easily separate myself, and I get hooked on things that I think are telling really, really, really great stories that push the head a little bit, and or elevate the overall caliber of production. When I first saw The Matrix story is okay. The Matrix is not like, wow, I couldn't live without that story.
The first one.
But the first one, yeah. When I walked out of when the credits started rolling on Matrix, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
They have so pushed the bar, raised the bar so much higher. This is what production value needs to be. You know, and so that's what I gravitate towards.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. And that's why I think I love Babylon so much. I was so fortunate to be part of that because we really pushed the edge of not only great storytelling, but also great production value for the dollars that we had.
Yeah.
Holy macaroni. You know, I mean, it wasn't even a competition between us and Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Funny how I always seem to forget that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Deep Throat Nine, whatever that show was called.
Along with millions of other people.
Yeah.
Just what call it called? Love Boat and Space, and you're there.
Yeah, it was a deep space franchise.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think our production value for what we did with what the money we had was just outstanding.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw the CG shot, you know, of the space behind. Like, you saw Epsilon 3, you saw the station, you saw space behind it, and you saw the ships just coming in. I'm like, whoa, there's movies that don't have shots that good. And I just stayed there.
Okay, you know what terrifies me about all this? Again, I get sucked into a lot of these sci-fi shows that I've never watched by my husband, who is the biggest geek in the world. He's the one that got me started.
Second biggest, because Tim is still the biggest.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Did we mention Tim isn't here right now?
Tim isn't here right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm filling in for Tim. That's...
I hate to even admit this, especially on this show, is I've never watched Babylon 5. I'm so sorry.
No.
I never have, but...
Honey, if there were more people, I mean...
But the good part about that is, or the bad part...
It'd still
part,
be on the air
on
if more
like
people
this.
Had watched it.
Summer is a dedicated and totally devoted fan. I mean, I'm sure she could quote almost every episode. And because of that, I'm like, maybe I need to watch this.
Right.
Yeah, and I know, God damn. I know that if I start, I'm going to be so mad that it's not on the air anymore. So that's a whole
Well, this is a good thing. You can get all five seasons on DVD and watch them uninterrupted, no commercials.
Oh my God.
Buzz through. It probably take you a month and a half to get through all five seasons.
Now, you know I'm sucked in. That did it right there, girl. That did it. The no commercials part. You got me. You got me. You had me at no commercials.
You know, that's funny, though, because I had to watch the show when it premiered, each episode, because I had seen the show go from its inception, from paper form and script, through production, through the post-production process, and I was privy to be intimately attached to the show. But it still wasn't the same as when you get to watch it with the commercials, with the breaks, with the, you know, coming up tonight, it'll film at 11, you know, more death and destruction. Tune into the news, that sort of stuff.
The part that I hated was the to be continued. I'm like, okay, I have to wait till next week and then figure out what time next week they're actually airing it. Because Babylon 5 in my area didn't come on the same time every week.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. It was the first two seasons. It was a search. Mm. You had to find it. And there was no TiVo to do a search on, you know, title. You had to flip through the TV listings or search online. You didn't know when the show was going to be on.
Did you ever miss an episode?
I missed a lot of the first season, yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, I got to jump in and throw my two cents in here because I can't sit here anymore. what caught me first about B5 and what got me going on B5 was, I think, one of the first or second episodes that I watched was, it wasn't the beginning because I was like, Summer, if I got it out of sequence or I got it at weird times, and then I'd get like maybe the second half of the first season and the last half of the second season, and then they'd back up and give me the first half of the second season or something weird like that. But what hooked me was the episode where they're walking down the corridor and they're talking. This is the great, great grandson of someone whose race had abducted his father back on Earth. And it was just
She knows what you're talking about.
It was a little segment. It was just a little short thing in the back. And I went, oh, my God, that's brilliant.
It
was just a little side piece. It was just a little off piece. Had nothing to do with the show. Had nothing to do with the script. It was just a little throw in. And I went, my God, somebody is really thinking this stuff.
It got
me hooked right there.
Yeah, I'm not sure that might have been the episode with the Nocoline feeder. They had several issues in court, and one of the Garibaldi was waiting for what's her name, Miriam, to show up to be a witness against this bad guy. But one of the cases ahead of his, this guy was, you know, wanted to sue this other alien because he had proof that, you know, his family had been caused damage because his great great grandfather had been kidnapped by this guy's great great grandfather.
That's the one.
And it was literally a little throwaway minute and a half thing.
A little throwaway walk in piece, and it caught me. And as soon as I saw that, I went, "This is absolute brilliance."
I'm trying to remember the episode, but I think it was the one with the Nocoline fever. Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, one of the things that has just roped me in was when you brought up pictures of Kosh, of the character that he played on your nice little laptop here, and showed me pictures. I'm like, that looks like an interesting character, because I'm sitting across from
you. Yeah, but you found
it
sexy.
Come on, what's that about? Don't tell them.
You're not the first person to say that's sexy. Yeah.
And that's
what's
that? It's about the armor.
It's about showing.
Talk to TD0013. It's about the armor. Mm-hmm. It's all about the armor.
And so she's showing right now a picture of your wife.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
she was on the show as well, right?
Yeah.
And is that where you met?
Yes,
it is. Yeah. And how did? Oh, you know what? You gotta share. How did that go? You know what? I want to know, and so do all your listeners.
Sure.
You met on the set. Love at first sight, or
for me?
Yeah,
for me.
Oh, damn! She's hot.
Yeah,
you lucky guy.
Totally. I fell in love with her the first moment I saw her, and we weren't even on set yet. She was just being brought back to. She was sort of meeting with the producers, you know, because she was in the pilot and she wasn't in the first season, and they brought her back in the second season. And I remember being in the hallways between the stages and saw her walk by, and I was just like,
oh, heart-stopping moment.
Wow. Absolutely.
Were you
slow-mo?
Were you in any way instrumental in bringing her back?
Not at all.
No, but glad.
Totally.
Oh, I'm Finally.
Best part of the whole damn 5 years.
So now when you're coming back to Phoenix, you're going to bring her with, right, next time?
I would, you know, I love traveling with her.
There you
you
go.
Know what we're doing? We are...
We give up. What are you doing?
Going in March, we're going to Rome.
Oh.
We're doing a sci-fi convention in Rome.
Oh, cool.
Is that World Fantasy this year?
I don't know what it...
WorldCon?
I don't think it's that early.
No, WorldCon is here.
Well, ask him. Yeah. He's going.
No, I don't know.
You're not a true geek. But unless anyway, you know.
I'm not a true geek. Okay. I'm good.
Pull
with
up
that.
The Dragon Page calendar. I'm looking. It's on there. We have all the Rome.
But in if you find contacts there, if we have some cyber savvy fans in Italy that speak our language, we should do a...
Hello, this is Jeffrey reporting from Rome.
That's pretty good.
You know what? I would not mind.
You need
mind
a Skype
going...
connection and just Skype well, back
no,
while
no,
you're
better
there.
Yet. I wouldn't mind going back to Rome, darling. Let's just go with him.
There you go.
Honey, do a show from Rome.
You saw my con schedule this year. Are you kidding? When exactly am I going to squeeze that in?
Do you have one scheduled in March?
I'm sure we do.
And I have spring break in March.
Oh,
I think we should go with you and your wife.
I think, and all the fans should come with you.
Summer and Joe should go.
Just go up Evo to your favorite and airline and say, Lori said I can come with these guys.
There you go. We could just do our show from there.
I'll send you the information.
This has all of a sudden become a slice segment.
I'm not sure exactly how that works. No, I can't find any listing for... Something in Rome from Locust, but I'll look. I'll look.
I'll get you the information.
But, should we call this a day and go back to drinking?
Did I mention it was damn fine tequila?
Yeah. we've got pretty much this show is Babylon 5, Slice of Sci-Fi, winging it.
All rolled into one.
I will sign off on the release that allows you to use them in each of those shows.
There you go.
Well, since they're all the same show anymore, it's pretty much just fine.
You know what? Just out of curiosity, could you tell me your wife's name?
Patricia Tallman.
And what character did she play?
She played Lita Alexander.
She played Lita.
Lita was
Mike says that. Oh, like, yes. Mike goes, she
oh,
played.
I know. Yes, yes.
Mike goes, she played Lita.
Lita. Yes, she played Lita.
Lita that was nice. I knew she that. She was a very sexy character.
Yes.
And she could give you a mind job like you
would. In summer, your input on that?
Sure.
That was priceless.
Right. Now we know who Summer would go lesbian.
That's it.
We already discussed that. Oh, we missed that episode.
I didn't get that.
Lita wasn't on the end.
No. Yeah, Asia. No.
Asia Carrera.
Asia Carrera.
Yeah.
I'm so not a geek. I have no idea.
Oh, that's
who that
not
is.
A geek, honey. She's a porn star. Yeah.
Oh, retired. You know retired.
Retired porn
Sorry,
star.
I should know that.
But one of the better ones. That's my wife.
Yeah.
There you go.
And now now you know why I'm married to her.
There you go. I understand. Right.
I think we should wrap this up.
You think so?
Maybe. There you go.
We can do another one.
We're just going.
One more shot for everybody.
More. Okay.
One more shot. Damn, I gotta work tomorrow, girl. My kids are gonna go.
I just like watching you play with the bottle like that. That's a killer right there.
My kids are gonna go, Mrs. Menegay is showing up in sunglasses. She had a rough night last night.
Just tell them you were out with the Vorlon. They'll understand.
There you go.
The Vorlon.
The Vorlon.
Okay. I bet you some of them will be jealous. They're like, you were out with the Vorlon?
Yeah.
They're angry. Yeah.
Well, they might know. You never know.
Yeah. You know what? Occasionally, a bunch of them do tune into the show, especially when I tell them to. So, I bet they do.
Find out how many of them know about Babylon 5.
Okay, I will.
That'd be cool.
I'd like to know.
I think it's time to educate a new generation for Babylon
5. You know what? I do, too. Maybe they'll bring it back.
You want her to put the head back on it, right?
I just want to watch her touch the bottle.
It seemed wrong for me to be touching the bottle. For the listeners that do not know,
nice.
When you buy a bottle of Awesome Brusso, it comes in a base... That's nice and round,
nice.
And it's got a nice long phallic symbol with a head.
It's very phallic with a symbolically shaped
head. It is, and I love it.
I think the guys just like watching the women play with the bottle. Yeah.
I actually like the bottom when it's empty.
That has a lot. There's a lot of factoring into that cost just for that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Exactly.
I'll be in the shower if you need me.
I'm going
to
cheers.
Cheers to you, dear. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
All right. Well, with that,
I can't wait to come back to Phoenix.
Right. We're gonna make it the Phoenix party. We have to bring Tim in next time because he'll feel left out.
Let's call Tim and Lita.
Tim and Lita. We're gonna have the whole crew in here next time. They're in Phoenix.
Yeah.
And that is it for this week's Babylon podcast. We will see you again on the other side of the gate.